Content warning. You are going to be triggered by something said in this episode. I guarantee you that, because our guest is Lloyd Kaufman of Troma, the independent film studio behind such films as the Toxic Avenger series, the Class of Nukem High franchise, Poltergeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, Terror Firmer, and many, many more. And if you know anything about Troma, they are not politically correct. I want you to know that going in. So if you're easily offended, you may want to skip this episode. Because Lloyd has something for everyone. I don't care if you're a liberal or a Republican or a communist or a feminist or anything else, he will have something that will trigger you. So know that in advance. And now on to the program. I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews, and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American empire, national security state operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat!
They teased him.
I'm gonna do it with you.
Okay!
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The vandals and the perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're all a kid. Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit-and-run drivers. For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. The Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. What you just heard was the trailer for the 1980s cult classic, The Toxic Avenger, brought to you by the little independent studio that could, known as Troma, led by Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Herz. Troma has, for nearly 50 years now, alternately offended, grossed out, and entertained film fans around the world. Back in the day, when you popped in a VHS or a DVD and heard this, you knew you were in for a traumatic treat. And whether you love or hate any given Troma title, their movies are always an experience, and a unique one at that. The Troma catalog includes such madcap titles as the aforementioned Toxic Avenger and its sequels, the Class of Nukem High franchise, Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, Monster in the Closet, starring a young Paul Walker, and, of course,
Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD!
Yes, that's right. The one and only legendary NYPD superhero equipped with
heat-seeking chopsticks, computerized 16-bite sushi, futuristic flying footwear, bulletproof gale force fans, and pyro-projectile parasols.
And of course, I would be remiss if I did not mention the great traumatic Shakespearean tragedy, Tromeo and Juliet, penned by none other than James Gunn of Guardians of the Galaxy fame. By the way, Troma is returning to Shakespearean territory with its latest offering, hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm. Troma's one and only Lloyd Kaufman will be joining us to discuss that movie, as well as the long and rich history of Troma on this edition of Parallax Views. Be forewarned, however, Lloyd is bound to say something that will offend you in the course of this conversation. Hell, he probably even triggered me a few times. With all that being said, let's get right to it with Lloyd Kaufman of Troma.
Welcome to Tromaville High, an average American high school, with one exception. It's located only 1 mile away from a nuclear power plant. They said it was 100% safe. But they were wrong.
There's no danger, Governor. We have the situation well in hand.
Welcome to the Class of Nukem High. Yes, at Nukem High, strange things are happening. The Honor Society has changed from a group of clean-cut preppies into a vicious gang of cretins.
We're the youth of today.
The teenage student body is transformed into horrifying mutations. And physical education has turned into a nightmare of violence. The Class of Nukem High. Introducing Warren and Chrissy.
I love you.
Two young lovers caught in a world gone mad. Class of Nukem High. Yes, at Nukem High, anything can happen. And does. The Class of Nukem High, where you'll learn the three R's. Reading, writing, and radiation. See the most explosive action of the year. The Class of Nukem High. Rated R.
Welcome to Parallax Views, hailing from Tromaville, USA, the one and only Lloyd Kaufman, known to fans as Uncle Lloydie. How are you doing, Lloyd?
Okay, Jay, how are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And I'm very excited to be speaking with you because I'm a longtime fan of Troma from movies like Monster in the Closet, Combat Shock, and of course, The Toxic Avenger. And for my audience, if I have anyone that's unfamiliar with Troma movies, how would you describe a Troma film?
Well, Jay, I would say a Troma film is something to which an audience goes, buys a ticket, knowing that they, I'm using the PC pronoun, that they will either love The Toxic Avenger, they may hate Romeo and Juliet, but they will never forget hashtag Shakespeare's shitstorm. The person who sees one of our movies in a theater knows he or she or they will have an adventure in the cinema. They'll have a genuine emotion. It will be a strong emotion, not like the about 99% of the mainstream movies, which are baby food. You can live on baby food. These Academy Award movies that are so PC and mediocre, they're baby food. You can live on it, but it's very boring. And, you know, we had that mediocre Korean film last time. There's so many better Korean movies than the one that won the Oscar.
And this you weren't a fan of Parasite.
Was it Parasite? Yes. Yeah, it was all right. I mean, if I had just discovered it on my own, I would have recommended it. But I mean, it ain't, it's not, there's so many better Korean movies. And the five nominated now for Academy Awards, geez, I don't think these are the movies that are going to change the world.
So I'm just curious, what were your experiences working on outside of Troma? You've had experiences with Hollywood movies. I believe you even helped on a Kirk Douglas movie called The Final Countdown. What was that like in comparison to doing more independent sort of cinema?
The Final Countdown was the movie that convinced me to forget about trying to work within the mainstream. It was a very unpleasant experience because nobody except for Kirk Douglas and his son and I seemed to be really interested in making a good movie. The director was a drunk. The first crew, his handpicked crew, I had to fire within I was associate producer, which is basically fancy production manager, and I had to fire the crew. It was awful. I hated that working on it. But the movie turned out okay. It's okay. But after that, no more mainstream. It was just nobody wants to make a good movie.
One thing I've always noticed with the mainstream movies is it seems like they'll throw money at a problem and there's not really creative solutions on set to things. I know John Carpenter has complained about that and a lot of other filmmakers. Do you think there's just a lack of creativity in Hollywood?
No, there's plenty of creativity. The problem is that the budgets are so big that the movies try to be all things to everyone. And the people who are the gatekeepers for the most part are idiots. They hate film. All they want to know is who's in it. You know, that kind of stuff. And they use statistics and tracking. And Trent Hager, who's a very good writer director who worked for Troma for a few years and wrote Citizen Toxie, The Toxic Avenger Part 4. He wrote a great script based on these two old women who would get bums to sign a insurance policy. They would take insurance out on these bums and then run them down with a car or kill them and collect the insurance money. And Trent wrote a great script, and he had Shirley MacLaine and Olivia Dukakis as the stars. And he had a producer and then the next layer and the agent and the bullshit and the William Morris Endeavor or the whatever the other one was. And they suddenly decide, you know, let's do some tracking. And it turned out Olivia Dukakis didn't track well. You know, who wants, or again, people, I don't think people go to a movie anymore to see Shirley MacLaine or Olivia Dukakis. They go to see a good movie. They might go to see a movie with Justin Bieber or with Taylor Swift. I'd go to see a movie with Taylor Swift. But who wants to see a couple of old bags? Certainly not the young people who go to movies, unless it's a really, really good movie. And there are really good movies with old people. There are movies that have grossed $1 billion with old people. But unfortunately, at the last minute, the producers hired, they decided that the old woman wouldn't track well enough. So they replaced Olivia Dukakis with Lindsay Lohan 2 weeks before they were to shoot the movie. Lindsay Lohan, got into very serious trouble with whatever she does to get into trouble. And the whole movie cratered. And that, of course, set Trent Haga's career back years. I interviewed him in a couple of my books. And also, I think the video of that interview is on Troma Now, the streaming platform that Troma has established, which has about 1,000 movies, documentaries, music videos, Tromet collectibles, and short pieces and lessons on make your own damn movie. There's all sorts of stuff there. And a lot of interviews with people like James Gunn and Trent Haga and John G. Avildsen, Stan Lee, lots of them.
I was
it's a pity for James, for Trent Haga, right? He could have been making, he could have made a couple of more citizen toxies, you know, $500,000 low budget movies to advance his career. Instead, he's crapping around for however long it took for these boys to destroy these white boys in suits to destroy his very personal, beautifully written script.
I was going to say, Trent,
One more thing. Shortly thereafter, regarding this tracking and rejecting the old woman, right after that, a movie called, it was about old men on motorcycles and had some had some old over the hill stars in it.
I think Peter Fonda and like John Travolta, William Macy were in it. I'm blanking out on it.
Yeah,
Old Hogs or something was.
Yes,
the name, I think.
You're right. Road Hogs, and it grew. It grossed $1 billion, so much so that there was a second Road Hog. There was a second one. If you make a good movie, you can put a frog in it. Make a good movie. It doesn't matter who's in it. It's going to be good, right? Look at Rocky. That was kind of my film school, Rocky and Saturday Night Fever. Nobody was in Rocky at the time, unknown director, unknown actor. But it was good. It was one of the greatest films of all time. And I had a big part in that and learned a lot. And Saturday Night Fever. John Travolta wasn't really a star. He was a teenage heartthrob, but nobody went to see a movie with him until Saturday Night Fever, and he became a worldwide dancing sensation. And he's a great guy. I learned a lot on that movie, too. So those were my film school, Saturday Night Fever and Rocky.
I wanted to mention really quickly, too, I'm glad you mentioned Trent, because he's a real talent, and the fact that Hollywood hasn't snapped him up, even as like an actor, it shows you, I think Hollywood is not necessarily always successful in seeking out talent.
Eventually talent will out. I'm pretty sure of that. But I'm sure he will end up doing as well as James Gunn or Eli Roth or... We have a new director, Brandon Bassam, who I think is on his way with this latest film that I produced, Slashening the Final Beginning, getting great reviews in a lot of festivals and opens in L.A. and New York, April 30th, L.A., and I think late May, early June in New York. Slashening Final Beginning. He's very good. There are so many good people around. Troma, is very good at finding them.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one thing that I know a lot of the interviews you do, we always want to ask the question, how do you find all these different, before they were famous stars? I mean, James Gunn, you mentioned, I believe, Billy Bob Thornton, right?
Well, we just distributed that movie.
Chopper Chicks.
Chopper Chicks and Zombie Town. It's a wonderful movie, but we were only distributors, and it's a great movie. I know the Troma team hung out with what's his name? Bobby Thornton. What's his name? Bobby something?
Yeah, Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob. Yeah, they hung out with him at Cannes, but I never met him. He sent us a nice note and signed a couple of posters, but that's as far as I ever met him. But it's a great movie, Chopper Chicks and Zombie Town. We lost the rights, so we had it for 20 years. So somebody else is distributing it, I suppose.
So how did you get the film bug? You were going to Yale, and I think you were looking to become a social worker or a teacher, and then you got the film bug. How did that happen?
Well, I was hoping to be a teacher or a social worker. Actually, social worker. I was, hoping I could maybe teach people with hooks for hands how to finger paint, or work with bums and teach them how to paint faces, happy faces, on beads and string the beads together. But Yale placed me freshman year in a room with a movie nut who ran the Yale Film Society. And I eventually drifted in and started watching the movies that the Film Society picked. And I became enthralled. I was hooked on movies. They were very much into the auteur theory of cinema, the idea that the director controls every aspect of the movie, the same way an author would control their book, or a painter would control their painting 100%. The French, after the war, developed a theory which says that the movie is the director's event, and it's all about the director. And the Film Society had a big stack of these magazines, Cahiers de Cinéma, which are the magazines of the French Cinémathèque, Paris's film museum, which is the most prestigious film and archival museum in the world. And they publish a magazine. And after the war, we had many journalists like Jean-Luc Godard and Chabot, not many, but the number of French movie journalists like Jean-Luc Godard and Claude Chabrol and Alain Tavernier and I think Melville, and they transitioned. I don't mean they transitioned into being women. They transitioned from journalism to movie making. And they made great movies. And they came up with this theory of the auteur. So they worshiped the director. And as you know, Hitchcock, people like Hitchcock and John Ford and Howard Hawks and Chaplin and Renoir and Fritz Lang and Leni Riefenstahl, they were indeed strong directors. And you can't miss a John Ford movie. Howard Hawks movie, George Cukor, Tarantino today. There are certain directors you can tell by the style that this is by Vincent Minnelli.
Right.
So I got hooked on that theory, and it was basically going to see the movies that Robert Edelstein, the Yale, head of the Yale Film Society, would present. And I got caught up in all that stuff. Jerry Lewis, I admire his work a lot.
I've always wanted to see The Day the Clown Cried.
Yeah, who doesn't? It's apparently very hard to see, but I do hear there. I bet it's great. If Jerry Lewis made it, it's going to be good. That's the thing.
I was going to ask, with regards to French filmmakers, I feel like there's been an influence from figures like Godard on certain Troma movies, or at least there's some references. Is there any influence from those sort of French New Wave filmmakers on some of your films?
Well, certainly the manner of, I'm not a huge fan of the Godard movies. I think they went over my head. But I love Chabrol a lot. I met him a few times, and I was on a radio show during the Cannes Festival one year with Godard, with Chabrol, and we were being interviewed about Terra Firma, and he asked French radio, is there any menstrual blood in Terra Firma? And of course there is. I think he asked it as a joke, but indeed there is. Terra Firma Menstrual Blood. I'm sure they are influential. You know, I can't say that I've imitated or paid tribute specifically. I have references to Samuel Fuller in my movies. I have references to John Ford, Chaplin, Keaton, and of course, others. They're not in my head right now, but.
Would Andy Warhol be one?
A huge reference. Yes, good point. Yeah, breaking the fourth wall. He was, in my opinion, he was the best at it. He was probably the best on cinema of breaking the fourth wall. But I love Thornton Wilder and Brecht. I grew up with on Bertolt. You know, I'm older than you guys. I grew up on Bertolt Brecht, who was kind of a pioneer in that department. I've always kind of enjoyed the breaking the fourth wall. And with Troma, where we have no money, there's a reason to do it, to kind of lets the audience in, lets the audience peek behind the curtain. For some of these $200 million movies to do that, seems to me, if you're going to spend $200 million on a movie, I wouldn't break the illusion. You know, with us, fans enjoy it because they know we don't have money. They can see that our practical effects don't quite, are not quite elegant enough, and they have fun with that. And I have had, Toxie talks to the camera, and we've done a lot of that over the years. When we started doing it early on, we got a lot of criticism because people didn't like, they felt that talking to the camera was artificial and broke the mood and all that. Now, Deadpool does it, and as do other big, big, big movies. It's very popular now to break the fourth wall.
Well, I was going to say, in a way, Troma was doing the sort of cinematic multiverse before Marvel or Disney or any of these other studios were doing that. I mean, you watch Citizen Toxie, I had that on about a week ago, and there's characters from all kinds of different Troma movies in it, like Sergeant Kabuki Man. Mm-hmm. I feel like Troma were sort of trailblazers in that regard.
Well, not. I think Marvel was a big influence. I've been friends with Stan Lee 50 years at least.
He narrates Citizen Toxie. Yeah,
indeed. And he's in about 8 of our movies. I think he's in that one too. Some, or maybe he just narrates it, but he's in about 8 or 10 of our movies. And we were very good friends, and the Marvel Universe in the comic books one of the few things I got out of Yale other than drugs was movies, comic books, drugs, and movies, and a little bit of Chinese studies. But the neighbor of mine had a huge stack of Marvel comics, and we didn't have comic books in the house when I was a child because they were looked down upon. And I never was interested in comic books. Oliver Stone had some Scrooge McDucks and classic comics. And I would read those when I was at his house when we were little kiddies and had sleepovers. But other than that, I didn't have any experience. And when I saw those comics by Marvel with Stan Lee creating, being the editor and Spider-Man and Steve Ditko and all the merry, Stan had names for all of the, he had alliterative names for all the, he would credit the people in the comic books, which I thought was cool. But also the fact that different characters came into each other's comic book, I got a kick out of that. So I would say the Tromaverse comes very much out of the Marvel universe.
No, I can definitely see that. I guess I just meant, I feel like Troma did it in the sort of cinema format before a lot of others.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you're right about that. And the Toxic Avenger as a superhuman hero, I think he is in more media, more different types of media than any superhero, because there's a cartoon show. There's a Broadway musical that ran a year in New York and is played in the West End of London and all over the world. There's, about 200 pieces of different merchandise.
I think he even appears in a Moby music video.
He does. That's very true. He appears in quite a number of musicals. But Moby did a great one. We're All Made of Stars. It's a wonderful song, by the way. And he's got Kabuki Man. He kind of does a fromage to Troma. As you said, he uses the Troma universe in his music video. And it's a great song. The song is beautiful. But Toxie's in, every possible thing you can think of. Which I don't think the other superheroes, even though they have $1 billion franchises, they're not in as many different facets as Toxie.
How did the idea for the Toxic Avenger come about? And, I think people don't realize that a lot of what is in the Toxic Avenger, you took some of the plot elements straight from headlines of newspapers you were reading at the time, if I'm recalling correctly.
No, you were recalling very correctly. All the movies I've done usually have a foot firmly planted in what's going on in the real world. And that's what satire is all about. And that's why Trey Parker and Matt Stone are such big Troma fans, because we're probably the only movie studio in history that has been 101% devoted to satire. With Toxie, the environment was a big deal. It was just coming around. This was many years before Al Gore got a Nobel Peace Prize, before Al Gore invented the internet and all that kind of stuff. This was way ahead of that. And Troma, the slogan, our corporate mantra, was movies of the future. And the battlefield is littered with people who've tried to imitate Troma and failed. And then a lot of the mainstream, obviously we've left our mark with James Gunn and Eli Roth and so many of the people who have started with us made, even Scooby-Doo had farting in it, and Troma influenced stuff that James Gunn had picked up in his 2 or 3 years with us. So, we have a huge footprint on the unappreciated for the most part. But if you talk to people out west, you'd be amazed how many of the movie stars would love to do a Troma film and keep their street cred. But the kind of stuff I do, we can't afford to hire SAG because too many characters in the scripts I make. And all
it's interesting,
kind of
too, because I feel like Troma movies, I feel like they people will say they're very niche, but I feel like they sort of have a populist feel to them, or a very, I don't know if commercial is the right word. I know that Tarantino has said that he feels like there's a lot of commercial potential with Troma films, but I think there is something there where, I think these movies can really speak to people, and they keep up the pace. There's a lot of action. Things are always happening. Whereas I feel like you don't see that as much in a lot of Hollywood movies, especially around so-called prestige season.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000,000%, not just 100%, but 1,000,000%. It's a very disappointing to go to the movies. I don't find very much on Netflix or Amazon that I'm interested in watching. I'm shocked, because there's a huge amount of great content, but I look at it and it's just media. It's just safety. So I guess safe is what they ought to call it. Safe-a-zon and safe flicks or something. I don't know. Any event, we're greatly unappreciated. This is my 50th year. And I think when I'm dead, our employees always say, when I'm dead, suddenly the New York Times and LA Times will grieve. What a loss. He was so influential. He changed the world. He had a lot to say, and all these famous people that have come. On every level, 7 books, how many movies, 50 years of making movies, Troma, the longest running. I can do a list that goes a mile long of all the things that Troma Entertainment has accomplished and contributed to the world.
Why has Troma been able to last so long? We're coming up on 50 years. I believe it's 47 years this year, and then In 2024, it will have been 50 years of Troma. What's the secret to the long-lasting success?
It's the fans. We wouldn't be here without our fans. It's thanks to the fans that we're still here. They go out and they make a hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, which is my most recent movie, is a fan. All the people in it are fans. All the people on the crew are fans. There are probably 2,000 background people and small parts and whatever who are in the movie. Every one of them was a fan. And the fans also go to their local theaters and ask the managers to play our movies. So they help us distribute the movies. They of course buy our Blu-rays, and you know, everything we do is on our own, right? We painted ourselves into a corner, so to speak, because we distribute our own Blu-rays. We have a store, TromaDirect.com. TromaDirect.com has got thousands of SKUs, books, T-shirts, memorabilia, collectibles, posters, DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS, everything, you name it, that's in that store. And we have our own streaming service, Troma Now, which is doing very well. And watch.troma.com. The first month is free. About 1,000 movies, video. I mentioned that, I think. But you can subscribe to Troma Now and get pretty much all of our movies. Every month we put up quite a number of new movies. And also new movies by other independent filmmakers that are really great, that actually have something to say and are not 100% invested in not triggering anybody. If you go to Troma Now, you might be triggered if you subscribe to Troma Now.
I actually wanted to ask you about that. So the political correctness thing has come up a few times here. Are Troma films simply meant to offend people, or is it all just good fun? Do you think there's a politics to it, or do you think people may, I guess, do people misinterpret Troma sometimes as being, you know, this Breitbart or Steve Bannon style right-wing shock jock enterprise, when I don't think that's what it is?
The people who, no, I don't think so, because we've got 1 million people a month, and we've been around for 47 years. So it's not, I think our movies are very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And as I say, the people know they're going to get something different. And I go to, different festivals, to present new movies. I get invited all over the world. And the people there are being entertained. They're having a great time. And hopefully they're getting a little bit of knowledge, a little bit. In 1983, I don't remember too many people talking about the global warming or the environment or pollution. I didn't hear too many people when Class of Newcomb High came around to be very upset with the dangers of nuclear power.
I was going to say Troma's War, I feel, is a pretty strong pushback on the sort of Rambo glamorization of war that we saw during the Reagan era.
Yeah. Also the fact that Reagan and his cronies were trying to make AIDS look like God had punished the perverted gay civilization. That's how they interpreted AIDS, as God's wrath. And Troma's War dealt with AIDS right in your face. And of course it was way ahead of its time. Terra Firma. When Terra Firma came out in the movie theaters, people didn't exactly buy all the tickets. And now the Blu-ray is hugely successful because people get it now. You know, it's been 25 years.
So, I was going to say Poultrygeist also had the whole, criticism of fast food, very Fast Food Nation style type criticism there.
Well, it was better than Fast Food Nation because the book Fast Food Nation was aimed at me, bourgeois old people, whereas the movie Fast Food Nation, nobody went to see because they already knew. The people had already read the book and the movie was pretty boring. So Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, is a powerful satire against the fast food industry, exposing how awful it is, as well as reminding people that we basically committed genocide, and now of the Indians, And of course, now it's a big deal. They just appointed an Indian to be head of the Department of Interior. Biden did. Everybody's crowing about that. Oops, I shouldn't say crow because Georgia's bringing back Jim Crow. Everybody's very excited about the fact that, you know, we're very much aware of the fact that we have to do something for the poor Indians who we basically exterminated. And poultry guys combined both the fast food industry as well as the genocide of the Indians together. You know, we kill. I'm vegetarian, and we butcher horribly and torture billions of chickens every year, and we exterminated billions of Indians. So fast food brings it all together.
I was going to say, with what's going on in Georgia right now, I know you have some thoughts on that and maybe why some people in Hollywood are apparently being silent about this Georgia voter suppression.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I put on my Instagram, I put a little video up, which I've got a fair, and on Twitter also suggesting, you know, asking all these limousine liberals, this woman Olivia Dunn or something. You know, she censored a lot of people, canceled people, but she was perfectly happy to promote her movie poster that she made with Bryan Singer. No problem there. An alleged pedophile. She was very much bragging about that and publicizing it. Where is she? Where is she on the Jim Crow laws? And, you know, Atlanta is the new Hollywood, right? All these new studios built in Atlanta and all these big budget movies being shot in Atlanta. Where are the producers? Why aren't they saying, because of these Jim Crow laws, we're not going to make any more movies in Atlanta? Where are they? I haven't heard George Clooney say a peep. Maybe he has. If I would love to hear about it, if any Troma fans have heard about any of the big Hollywood people being upset with the Jim Crow laws in Georgia and now coming to about 15 other states, where are they? That's why I'm very happy not to be in the mainstream after 50 years. In retrospect, I may have had to sleep on the floor and learn how to defecate in a paper bag and eat crap food and whatever. But I can be honest.
So in other words, I mean,
well, not since, totally honest.
since Atlanta is becoming such a big place for making films, you know, maybe we don't want to talk about some of the unseemly things going on in, you know, Georgia right now. Or maybe that's how some people in Hollywood look
at
it.
They vote with their pocketbooks, of course. Right? Cancel Louis C.K. because he waved his penis at a few people. Right? What did he do? He waved his penis, so cancel him. Ruin his career for that, which luckily they couldn't do. They did him a favor because he's getting millions of people for $5 a shot every time he puts together a new YouTube tape or whatever he does. You know, this whole idea of tearing people down. All these assholes on Twitter, these third-rate bloggers, where are they? I don't see them. I don't even see them fighting against Jim Crow because they all want to make movies and they don't want to upset the, you know, we used to have something called the blacklist. Kirk Douglas, with whom I worked for several years, he broke the blacklist with his movie Spartacus, where he permitted Dalton Trumbo to have a screen credit. This is endemic in our industry. The main Hollywood studios are all sucking the Chinese dick and censoring their scripts so that it will comport with the genocidal dictatorship that is China, right? They don't care whether there are Uyghurs up north in China, whether there are Muslims being eradicated in China, whether there are concentration camps. We talk about the immigrants at the front gates of Troma. 5,000 children being separated from their parents. That's terrible. That's unconscionable. But in China, there are millions of children being separated from their Muslim families. And nobody, I don't hear too many of the studio heads saying anything. So, you know, it's too bad. It's an industry that's most of the people in the mainstream are absolute scum of the earth.
What did you make? I know you've commented on it before, but what did you make of Disney initially deciding to get rid of James Gunn on the one Guardians of the Galaxy because of this targeting by these alt-right, you know, neo-Nazi types that got mad at him for making a joke, you know, 10 years ago or whatever?
Yeah, a lot of those jokes were they were Twitter jokes. They were made with me, actually. So, you know, I probably not so hot that, you know, I don't think it did any good for James Gunn making jokes 10 years ago with me. But my guess is the right wing got pissed off at him because he's got millions of followers, I suppose, and he was telling the truth. I was the first one to do a video and put it up immediately. This was announced on Friday, I think, or the first, no, the whatever. The, yeah, Friday during San Diego Comic-Con. And James, I made a video at the Troma booth at San Diego Comic-Con immediately. And I put it out on my social. And usually we get celebrities coming to our booth at San Diego Comic-Con to say hello. And not a lot, but there are five or six who love Troma and come and chat with us. And I asked, you know, hey, let's do a little video and support James Gunn. And they would say, yeah, I'm coming back. I got to go do something. I do panel, you know, whatever. Nobody ever came back to do the video. It took a long time before anybody that I saw come out publicly to support James Gunn. And again, that's the world we live in.
There were just a few more things I want to cover before I let you go. Sure. And the first is, since your new film is Shakespeare Shitstorm.
You have to say the hashtag.
Hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm. You're revisiting the Shakespeare grounds as Troma did with Tromeo and Juliet. And I know you've referenced Shakespeare a few times in various interviews talking about that quote, to thine own heart be true. What is it about Shakespeare that you're attracted to?
He's entertaining and he deals with universal themes that are both hilarious and touching. And I would have done The Tempest long ago, but I wanted to wait until I could really feel, you know, we did Tromeo and Juliet. That was kind of, which is a brilliant film. James Gunn wrote a script that knocked you out. And it's a wonderful film. The Tempest, I wanted to wait till I was kind of the age of Prospero, the main character. And the themes in The Tempest have moved me since I was a child. I went to see it when I was about 8 years old with my mommy, with Morris Karanowski playing the main part. Anyway, I decided to do The Tempest since I could feel Prospero's pain. You know, The Tempest is a lot about losing power and being old. And also, it's got a lot of magic in it. And I make movies which indeed are magic. And also, the movie is The Tempest. The play is very trippy. And it's got at least one monster in it. And got all sorts of fantasy. It's very fantastical. So it's my favorite Shakespearean play. And I think it was a perfect vehicle for me to make fun of both the big pharma, you know, these, you turn on the television every 3 minutes, there's a commercial about drugs. Take a drug for this, a drug for that. And the little, for 30, 40 years of my, well, I've been married 47 years, and I started watching those crappy shows in the morning, Today Show and the one with that, they're horrible, but my wife watches them. And every 2 minutes, there's a commercial, literally every 2 minutes, there's a commercial for drugs. So you have these little children watching these stupid shows with their mothers while they're eating their Fruit Loops on their way to school. And the taking of drugs is normalized. So now we have 80,000 people this year who died of opioid overdose. 80,000, that's just opioids. Who knows what, you know, due to the opioid thing. So nobody says anything about that. We have two generations since I've been married who've been brainwashed that drug taking is a normal thing to do. Very bad. So, and of course, all the bullshit on social where people are canceling and ruining other people, people who build their own miserable third-rate careers by knocking down people like me. Although in my case, I've been canceled so many times, it doesn't matter. I mean, our fans, a certain previous president, former president used to say, I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and the fans would take my cause. The fans of Troma make us look like we have a huge corporation. We've got maximum 10 full-time employees at any time, except when we're making a movie, and then there's about 80 people. So, you know.
And you guys also, you know, you do stuff that I find very interesting with regards to, and I don't know if you've done it recently or if you're still boycotting it, but the street performances at Cannes Film Festival. I feel like you know how to sort of get the word out there about Troma, even when, you know, the mainstream doesn't like you getting the word out.
Well, that's a good point. However, the last we went to, we had no more. I made a document. That's a good point. I just did, but a couple of years ago, I made a little documentary called From Festival
to Fascism.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. And it kind of shows you what happened. Basically, Sundance, Cannes have policed us out of their festivals, primarily because we're too festive. I mean, we have done absolutely nothing to harm anybody. We've kept nobody up at night. We haven't done anything dangerous. We've done nothing to... but these big festivals have become corporate. They have bloated, overpaid bureaucracies, and they're much more at the they need the giant conglomerates, media conglomerates, and governments to finance them. So they don't want any people like us there for some reason. Apparently, we're taking away too much. Attention. Too many eyeballs are focusing on Troma movies. So I was able to eliminate the problem we had the last time when these fucking... Yeah, they beat us up. They confiscated our photographs. It was like we were in communist China.
Yeah, they went after Sergeant Kabuki Man. He's an NYPD. How can they go after a New York police officer?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the French have never been exactly... you know, we've never been really sure if they're on our side or not. And actually, that area of France was a big Nazi enthusiastic worshiping area. They loved the Nazis in the south of France. So, you know, it's kind of back to their roots, I guess, by becoming more elitist.
So I was
I could go on for hours to tell you all the unpleasantries that have happened to us at Cannes. But the last time we went, that was the limit. You know, I'm 75 years old. And
it was crazy because they were allowing the Disney types to run around in their costumes. Yeah. But you guys weren't allowed to run around in the Toxic Avenger costumes. What's up with that?
They had guns. The Disney had the guns and swords and no problem. They're in that documentary, by the way. We interviewed them for the little doc. It's only about 12 minutes. Pretty good.
So before closing out here, the last two things I wanted to mention were, first, could you talk about, you made a movie, I believe, back in the early days of Troma, Sugar Cookies, with Theodore Gershuni and Mary Woronoff, who were associated with Warhol. And I wanted you to be able to talk a little bit about spending time at the Warhol factory on the maybe outer edges of it, because I haven't heard you speak about it that much.
Well, I fell in love with Warhol when I was at Yale, and I would come down to New York, since that's where my family lives, and hang out there, certainly very often, Thursday through Monday or whatever. And in fact, we made two feature-length movies in New York while I was at Yale, 16 millimeter, of course. At any rate, I sort of gravitated down there to Maxis, Kansas City, and hung around. You know, again, in those days, I had to wear Yale had you wear a suit and tie and sports jacket, and I was brought up that way. So it was kind of my outfit. So I'd be hanging around with all these crazy people in my bar mitzvah suit. And I hung around the fringes of the factory, and I did meet some of the people. And Sugar Cookies starred Mary Warrenoff, who I had seen in Chelsea Girls, but I didn't discover her. Her husband, Theodore Gershuni, the director of Sugar Cookies, married her. So she came with him. And Sugar Cookies was our tip of the hat, our reimagining of Vertigo. Wonderful. Maybe the greatest movie ever made, or the greatest English language movie ever made. It's between Citizen Kane, Vertigo, in my opinion. Any rate, I love Vertigo, and I wrote the script, and Ted changed it up a lot, as a director does. And Mary starred in it, and it was supposed to be a very steamy, sexy, erotic version of lesbianic Vertigo. But when it came time to shoot, Ted and Mary kind of didn't do exactly what I had in my head. And it's the only X-rated movie in history that lost money. Lynn Lowry, by the way, who was in one of my first movies, The Battle of Love's Return, which is Oliver Stone's first movie. unfortunately, Sugar Cookies, as good as it is, and it's very good, it's boring. But we do have Ondine in it, and Battle of Love's Return had a couple of the Warhol people in it. And Ted directed another movie, which I was one of the producers. I was like associate producer, called Silent Night, Bloody Night.
Okay, so you were a producer on that. I'm a big fan of that one, actually.
Yeah, it's a good one. And Ted was terrific. Mary was terrific. And it's very good film. Again, it's slow and ponderous, but it's got quite a bit of pretty good bloody stuff in it. And a lot of good stars. John Carradine, Walter Abel, Patrick O'Neill. I write about this stuff, and I've written 7 or 8 books. Well, I've written 6 movie-related books and 2 novels. So you can get a lot out of the nonfiction books that I've written.
One of the last things I wanted to touch upon, it's interesting because I know we've talked about Hollywood not being the best place, and maybe academia not respecting your work. But I think maybe we're starting to see some changes, and hear me out on this. You know, the movie that your brother directed, Mother's Day, is now being discussed in certain film classes. You know, it's being taken very seriously for its criticisms of consumerism. And Troma has also helped bring movies like Combat Shock, the art house films of Giuseppe Andrews, and really artsy films like Story of a Junkie to audiences. And I think that's starting to get recognized a little bit. I mean, how do you feel about things like that, especially, you know, Mother's Day now being sort of given a critical assessment in a lot of film studies classes?
Mother's Day is a masterpiece. My brother was the most talented of us, in my opinion. Of our group and of our family. And he didn't want to live on, you know, he didn't care to be sleeping on the floor and learning how to defecate in a paper bag. And he went out to California, and he tried, but the fuckers out there, they didn't buy his act. You know, he didn't wear a scarf, and he didn't talk a lot of bullshit, and he didn't beat up women, and he didn't do a lot of the shenanigans that Oliver Stone and Abel Ferrar do. And he never was able to make it out there. And he became a bread maker, a baker. He's got about 400 people in San Diego who work for him. They make the best French bread, challah bread, rye bread, pastries, chocolate chip cookies. It's called Bread and C-I-E, French. It's French, means bread and company, but it's French. Just don't, regarding the challah, do not ask anybody how much does the challah cost, because if they're Jewish, they're not going to appreciate that jeu de mots.
Are you happy to see films like Mother's Day and Combat Shock getting more of a critical reassessment, at least among the circles of, you know, film nerds and whatnot.
Well, Mother's Day is Eli Roth's favorite horror film. And it when it opened in New York, we were not the original distributors. A much bigger company, and they took full page ads in the New York Times, it was a huge success. And to this day, now Troma is distributing it, and it definitely has a huge following, as do Toxic Avenger and Bloodsucking Freaks and Class of Nukem High and some of the comedies we made.
You met any fans of Monster in the Closet? I feel like that one's not brought up enough.
No, I agree with you. Monster in the Closet is brilliant. It's the best. And it missed, you know, it's a wonderful satire of Hitchcock. You know, if you're a Hitchcock fan, you should love, you should run, you should do whatever you can to get a Blu-ray of Monster in the Closet. It's on Troma now. You can see it on Troma now. And it's got a lot of stars: Stella Stevens, Claude Akins, John Carradine. There are all sorts of Fergie's first movie. In fact, Paul Walker plays he's one of the kids, one of the main parts in Monster in the Closet. And it's a wonderful film. But unfortunately, people didn't get it when it came out, and they still don't get it. But it's very underrated. Also, Death by Temptation, another Monster in the Closet.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, among others. Death by Temptation, which is probably our best library movie. That wouldn't exist without the fact. In fact, I shot the climax of Death by Temptation. I was the DP replacing Ernest Dickerson. Combat Shock. Also, we paid for about half of Death by Temptation. Monster in the Closet. Our money is what made it a reality. And I shot some of that. Combat Shock. We got it when it was not finished executive produced it. So yes, indeed. Story of the Junkie, we distributed. We had nothing to do with the creativity. But these are great movies. There's another one, a black and white film called Screamplay. Rufus Sader, who's now a very important artist who does mosaics. And things of that nature, but kind of pointillism and mosaics. He made a movie called Screamplay, black and white. In fact, he's got a famous underground experimental, Cukor, one of the Cukor brothers. George Cukor is one of the stars, or the star. But nobody showed up. You know, it was black and white. And in those days, nobody wanted black and white, and especially on video and TV, they wanted color. So. That was the end of Screamplay, but it has a life on Troma now, and it's terrific, especially now since black and white is kind of fashionable again.
I was going to say too, just because it popped in my mind just now, you know, when I first was getting ready to do this interview, I was a bit worried because I had seen your interview in that last Blockbuster documentary, and I thought, oh, I wonder if Lloyd's or Uncle Lloydy is going to, you know, be angry with some of my questions, and you've been very nice. So what was it about the last Blockbuster that maybe set you off a little bit? And also, why does Blockbuster just straight up suck?
Well, it sucks because they didn't have variety. They preferred to have 30 copies of Jiggly and no copies of Combat Shock or Toxic Avenger or Stuck on You or Squeeze Play or Waitress or Story of a Junkie. People would have loved those films. But they had a policy of quantity, not, you know, kind of top 20. That was their policy. And of course, after they put everybody out of business, they went out of business. What surprised me about the last Blockbuster documentary is it got a huge amount of attention. I mean, it's on net, it's all over the place, it's on every platform. And everybody in it is nostalgic about it. I couldn't believe it. They all love Blockbuster. Either that or they're afraid to tell the truth. I assumed everybody hated Blockbuster, and I was just, you know, repeating what everybody thought. But what happened is that I'm a bit of a manic depressive, and I guess my energy level was down. And when the guy asked me the first question about who am I, you know, if I were interviewing you, Jay, I would try to find out something about you, and I would at least introduce you as a few facts. I think it's kind of humiliating for me after 50 years to have to tell who I am. I'm sorry. I thought I turned it off. Well, this part of the interview is...
it's not too loud, so it's okay.
Jesus Christ. I'm so sorry. All those... at least the thing's been vibrating like crazy. They may be watching you. Maybe they're watching this. But no, I think that was it. You know, I'm very narcissistic, I guess is the word. So I take everything personally, you know. So when somebody tells me, and I don't think the director meant any harm. I think he just, you know, wanted me to talk about the trauma, and maybe he was giving me an opportunity to plug Trauma Now. It's the future, but now a platform, our own Netflix. Maybe he gave me an opportunity to plug hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, but I saw it sort of as an insult that the director ought to be, the documentarian ought to be teeing up who I am so that, you know, like you just did. It was great. Your questions were terrific, and thank you for being so prepared. I don't mind if somebody wants to ask me why did I get beaten up on the Morton Downey show on Universal's
That was when Trauma's War came out. I did want to ask about that, but I had forgotten.
Yeah, it's the wonderful Trauma team put it up on Netflix, so it's all over the place. You know, I get people ask me constantly. They think that this was a prank, that I was in on the joke, but I wasn't. Well, in fact, I ended up with a separated shoulder. And next Monday, I'm having my shoulder. All these years, it's been bothering me, and now I can't. I can barely move it. I can't even masturbate, and it's so painful. So I'm going to get a shoulder replacement on Monday. But it's because of that damn Morton Downey show. I had an expert. We sued them, and I did have an expert witness to testify to the fact that the X-rays showed that my shoulder had been dislocated, but it wasn't that serious.
Wait, so was Morton Downey Jr., was he really that much of an asshole, or was it just like, was he just doing it as an act and it went too far when he went on, or?
His father was a great heartthrob tenor, a singer, you know, kind of Rudy Valley type. His father was famous, very, very famous. And my father told me that. My father remembered that. So this Morton Downey must have been spoiled, and you know, a lot of showbiz people are fucked up, with their children are fucked up, he obviously is a very fucked up man. He tried to make it as a liberal, as a liberal supporting the Kennedys and you know, Teddy Kennedy and the girl who got drowned, and he tried to make it in that world, in the Kennedy world, and got nowhere. So when he did this TV show, he suddenly switched to become a kind of a fascist. And he basically, during his first week, which is when I was on, the show was live. And basically, it was all about, you know, it was like a wrestling show. It was like a witch burning, you know, a figurative witch burning. They prepared the audience ahead of time and tell the audience when Downey says, do we give him thumbs up or thumbs down? And when he did thumbs down, he would, yeah. You know, he'd tell the audience, and they'd practice it ahead of time. Because I heard them when we were in the green room, I heard them. And I was thinking to myself, this is interesting. And also when I got into the audience, they were dressed up. People had guns and penises on their noses. They told my assistant that this was going to be a Halloween tribute to Trauma. And my assistant, I thought he would be, his mother would like to see him on TV. So I had him come on with me. And he got roughed up. He didn't get roughed up as much as I did. But the audience, in order to get off the stage, you had to go through the audience. So, you know, all these nuts with, you know, I assumed they were fake rifles and guns and penises on noses and dildos and God knows what else. And my wife was in the audience. It was her first night out. She had just given birth to Charlotte Kaufman, who plays Audrey, the deaf mute child in Terror Firmer. But my wife had just given birth, and this was supposed to be a wonderful evening out. And
she's doing documentary work now, right? Your daughter.
Well, both, yes. Charlotte is in Alabama doing a major project with the HBO or for HBO. And the older daughter, Lily Hayes, is taking over this massive 10-year project that we started at the Cannes Film Festival, Occupy Cannes. And we've had we've had an editor on it for several years, and have been shooting more movies. And our fans actually is an example of how our fans fuel Troma Entertainment. They're the ones who raised about I can't remember how much, but they raised enough money to get us over there with our actors. I mean, I was, you know, I and a few salespeople would go over with the and rent offices and rooms, but we didn't have enough for the actors and a couple of the crew. So our fans helped us to basically get the basis of that documentary, and now Troma and I are financing it. Go on.
I was going to say, it's interesting with regards to the fandom. I think the fandom of Troma is actually much more varied than people realize at times. I mean, I have friends that consider them LGBT, even people in that sort of T camp that are very much Troma fans. And I think some people are like, oh, isn't Troma about making fun of those people in a mean-spirited way? I don't think Troma really is. Like I said earlier, I think Troma's pro get your freak on, basically.
Absolutely. And recently? There's one of our movies, one of my films, where I think we make fun in a pretty intense way of, what the hell was it? It might be Terra Firma. I can't remember. But I remember I asked a nurse who was in the audience, do you think we handled this in a bad taste way? She said, no, it's terrific. You shoved the issue. Oh, the AIDS in Troma's War, which, you know, was the first movie where AIDS was really pushed in people's faces and not swept under the carpet. And, you know, it's very important. And now people see that. They get it. And the same with Toxie. The people who supported the Toxic Avenger were his mother, the children, and the gay guys. Everybody else turned on him. And eventually the military did come around. The young soldiers realized they refused to kill him and kill his girlfriend, his significant other. They refused because it was the wrong thing to do. But I have a big following of trans people. I don't know what the proper word is, but my Twitter feed and Instagram, a lot of transgender people really like our films, and I think my career has basically been a worshiping of the underdog, whether it's the nerd in the gym who people bully, or the unfortunate people who have been exposed to nuclear detritus, nuclear waste, or the AIDS people, victims of AIDS. I mean, Terra Firma predicted everything that's going on today: the terrorism, the chemical warfare, the high tech. Sabotaging about everything that exists, the military industrial complex, you know, except I've changed it now to the elite it's the bureaucratic elite, the corporate elite, and the labor elite that run the show, that run society. It used to be the military and corporate, the author, professor who wrote The Power Elite, C. Wright Mills. Yeah.
C. Wright Mills. Yeah, I'm a big fan of C. Wright Mills. Yeah.
And I grew up on all that stuff. My grandmother was a very left-wing socialist, and she, you know, got me into I.F. Stone and
Scott. Oh, you were a fan of I.F. Stone? I was unaware. I've read I.F. Stone's stuff, his old stuff from the Vietnam era. I was a big fan.
Yes, very entertaining. My family subscribed to it my entire lifetime until he stopped. And my grandmother knew him and knew a lot of the civil rights workers, and they stayed in her home, and she gave them money and her antiques, and, you know, so support them and stuff like that. So I had a big earful about what a great man Fidel Castro was and how bad Batista, the dictator, was, and how, you know, how Cuba was no longer the whorehouse of American rich people. And of course, my parents would go to Cuba for vacation. So, you know, I'd get the other side of it, and I bought into all that stuff.
Well, Lloyd Kaufman, I want to thank you for coming on Parallax Views. I think you've really helped me achieve a dream that I wanted to achieve on this show. I'm probably the only person in the podcasting world that has interviewed both Noam Chomsky and Lloyd Kaufman. That is a dream come true. And I love Troma. Let my listeners know how they can keep up with Troma, Troma Now, and hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm.
I should?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the most important thing is to keep independent cinema alive, at the real independent cinema, not Fox Searchlight or Sony Classics, where it's all been pre-strained for you, where it's safe. Take a risk and join the Troma team, and you can support independent cinema and hundreds of independent filmmakers by subscribing to Troma Now. It's the future, but now it's free the first month. You go to watch.troma.com. And here's the new news, big news. You hear it first, Jay, on your podcast. But starting June 1st, Troma Now will be on Roku and all the important platforms that we should be on. Right now, it's only watch.troma.com, which is a website. And thanks to the fans, which have been increasing tremendously, we were able to afford to create the proper app and technology so that we can bring Troma Now to all these other platforms like Roku. And that's all thanks to our fans. So that's the best way to support Troma, I think. If you want to talk to me, I answer all my Twitter and Instagram. And if by chance I don't answer, just go after me again, because I'm very disorganized. So again, thank you. And thank you for those great questions. I mean, the fact that you know who C. Wright Mills is, that's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
My grandmother also, my grandmother gave me another book called Brave New World, right?
Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't Aldous Huxley. It was by Scott Nearing. And Brave New World was about Mao Zedong's China and how the wonderful Mao Zedong had kicked out the crooked Chiang Kai-shek. And like rats, they ran to Taiwan, you know. Of course, now Taiwan is a real democracy. And the dictatorship on mainland China wants to, you know, take them over. We're the only thing standing between Taiwan and which used to be called Formosa being taken over. And God knows how many people tortured and brainwashed. So Brave New World is this book by Scott Nearing and praising Mao Zedong. And, you know, as a kid, I'd go to school and tell my sixth grade classmates, you know, Fidel Castro is a good guy. We shouldn't be invading Cuba. And my classmates actually were very open-minded. They didn't, there was no cancellation. There was no lynching, figurative lynching. They were interested in debating. So it was pretty interesting in sixth grade. So anyway, you've had enough of me. So again, I thank you. I hope you'll come to visit Tromaville one of these days.
Sometime in the near future, a major earthquake will lay waste to the entire California coastline. From out of the rubble will rise a menace far more terrifying than the death and destruction. Surf Nazis.
Who rules the beaches?
Surfers rule!
Who rules the surfers?
The beautiful beaches, once the crown jewels of California, are now ruled by ruthless gangs. Only one person is powerful enough, daring enough, brave enough to stop them. Only one person can ensure that surf Nazis must die. She's tough.
I wanna buy a gun.
Talking like trash, but I'm more interested in something that'll take the head off a honky at 20 paces.
She's dangerous. She's all woman. She's Leroy's mama. And as long as she's alive, the surf Nazis must die. First, there was the road warrior.
Then there was The Terminator. Now comes an action film of relentless excitement.
Taste some of Mama's home cooking, Adolf!
See the film that is creating a tidal wave of action all over the world. See Surf Nazis Must Die.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lloyd Kaufman of Troma. Say what you will about Lloyd's tendency to maybe ruffle feathers. I find Troma's movies really entertaining. I think that films like the Toxic Avengers series, Class of Nukem High, Poltergeist, they have a lot more going on in them than people give them credit for, and I was so happy to have Lloyd on the program for that reason. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@ProtonMail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Mark, Chase, Zach, Omar, Ryan, Ted, Gratz, Martin, Gary, Emilia, and Mickey. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. There is also a $1 tier and a $5 tier. Any amount will help. Your support is what keeps this show going. So if you appreciate the work I do, $1, $5, $10, $15 doesn't matter. Please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Again, that's patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said,
inexplicable and incredible events often take place in the most ordinary places. Usually these seemingly unexplainable occurrences are eventually explained, but every so often they remain mysteriously incredible. Monster in the Closet.
We ain't talking about no snake here.
President declares national emergency.
Yes, it was something so hideous. So gruesome. So frightful. That it could only dwell in one place.
I know every one of your hiding places.
Among the slippers and pajamas in the grisly depths of your closet. The entire United States Marine Corps could not stop it.
That's where this bastard Blackberry came from!
The most sophisticated armored weaponry and firepower could not stop it. Fantastic cinematic special effects could not stop it. The most highly developed nuclear flower pots could not stop it. Even the most incredible array of international superstars. Henry Gibson, Stella Stevens, Donald Moffat, John Carradine, Howard Duff, Claude Akins, Paul Dooley, Jesse White, Frank Ashmore, Donald Grant, Denise DeBerry could not stop it. It's gripping. It's shocking. It's horrifying. It's Monster in the Closet.
We must act immediately. Destroy all closets.
Dr. Pennyworth, could you understand what it said?
No.
Was it a deranged killer? Or was it just looking for a date? Monster in the closet. It's coming out.
Until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say, don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.